Okay, solid red. Solid gold.
So put it right in between you and that. Is Lisa not coming, Fred?
Sorry.
Yeah, you can lay down.
And we knew the Ryan was
stuck with me, I think.
No, that's fine.
Okie dokie. Tracy, are you ready to rock and roll?
Do we need to push the button over here?
It's already on.
No, it's already on. You got it.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi,
Daddy. Oh, hi, Daddy.
Oh, yeah, hi, Daddy. take you anywhere.
Is it yours?
No, it's,
no, it's yours.
All right. So before this goes any deeper, I would like to call to order the Kaiser Little League Park Long Range Planning Task Force for Wednesday, February 27th, 2019. And we will go around the room with introductions for the record, starting with Mr. Holland.
What's your introduction?
Say who you is.
Clint Holland.
Thank you. And for the record, Ryan Walsh is absent.
Bowling.
With?
Venerius Baseball.
I'm Brad Arnsmeyer with Kaiser Little League.
Dan Kohler, City Council.
Matt Blair, Task Force. Parks Board, and other things.
That's what I was looking for. Kathy Clark, Mayor.
Marlene Parsons, City Council.
James Hutches, Chamber of Commerce.
Lisa Buick is absent this evening.
Tracy Davis, City Reporter.
And in the audience.
Chris Epley, City Manager, and I will be leaving there around 7. So if I get up and go, it's not because I'm mad.
What are we done?
I'm storming off.
You will know that we're in good hands.
So, Bill Lurie, Public Works Director, and I won't leave unless I am mad.
Eric, I'll look at your times.
All right, thank you all for being here. The first order of business is interested citizens, but I think everybody who's in the room will be engaged in the conversation. So let's go on to the approval of the minutes from January 2nd, 2019. Did everybody have a chance to review those?
Yes, yes. Mayor, I move approval of those minutes.
Second.
Moved by Marlene, seconded by Matt. Any additions, corrections, alibis, or other? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Report and discussion from the subcommittee, the parent organization plan. Mr. Lawyer, take it. Mr. Matt Lawyer.
Yes.
And team.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So first off, I want to state for the record that I think there has been some discussion and some concern about these two organizations working together prior to this task force convening, and I can tell you with absolute certainty that I have experienced nothing of that nature. Working with Brad and Ryan has been an absolute pleasure. They've been extremely professional. Even where sometimes maybe their philosophies don't align, their desire to work towards a solution for the facility has been outstanding. They've come with very good ideas and actually even discussed in great detail areas where maybe their philosophies don't align, but where they can come together for the good of the facility. So I think they're both to be commended in that nature, and I just wanted to stay on the record that, in my opinion, I think it's the right foot forward looking towards the future and not dwelling on the past. So, What I have before you is the notes that are a combination of the two meetings. You'll note that in the second meeting, which was just done on Monday, Councilor Parsons was unable to attend because of a council commitment. I'm just going to go through these first, just so we can get this on the record, then we can go back and talk about them if you want to, if that's what you'd like.
Cool.
Okay. So note, this is the note of the two meetings, the participants for myself, Councilor Parsons for one meeting, Brad Arnsmeyer, Kaiser Little League, and Ryan Walsh, NYB. The scope was to discuss the possible management structure for the Kaiser Baseball and Softball Complex Foundation, 501c3. The first thing we talked about was the management structure. What came out of the first meeting and the second meeting is captured here. The discussion was to have president and vice president of both organizations, a council liaison, a parks liaison, and a citizen or citizens member that would be voted on by the board and then approved approved by the council. The second piece came out where they said that they are interested in having a concessions and media board member, so somebody that's specifically targeted as part of the executive board to do concessions and media. And they also both expressed an interest in asking Mr. Jerry Walker to participate on this board as well.
So if I press pause, I have three questions.
Yeah.
One is it the intention that the council person be a liaison or a voting member? Liaison means that you're there for information only. That's why I'm asking the question.
I think it would probably be a voting member, and I think that would be items that would be fleshed out later on in the bylaws. But
I think I have a difference of opinion. I think it should be a liaison at this point.
I am getting signals that this would be a non-voting liaison for informational only because we have a contract. There would be a contractual agreement between the city of Kaiser and this foundation. And however, on the Heritage Foundation, I'm a voting member.
But are you there as the mayor?
Yes.
So whoever is mayor is on that board?
The mayor appoints a person to be a voting member on that foundation board as per our agreement. So that is there's a precedent there.
Okay, that's fine. And my only concern hearing that was that we don't want to overarch. This isn't our organization; it's their organization.
Right. We didn't want to be this.
We don't want to. But if there is other precedent for that, and it's working, that's fine.
It is, in my opinion, it's been an advantage on the Heritage Foundation because we are a property owner, and therefore it's important to have a reasonable vote on the decisions going forward. So. But this is why I asked the question, because it is important in terms of what this looks like going forward. So thank you for that clarification. The other one would be the parks liaison. Again, you used that word. Is it the intention to be voting or informational?
As I understood it, and even that, this is just recommended. It's not anything put in.
But I'm trying to make sure I hear what you guys talk about. Sorry.
Well, and Brad, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this was kind of intended to be maybe a council member and or a parks person, maybe not necessarily both of them. Were you guys more inclined to want to see a parks person and a council person?
Maybe the and or. I don't think you necessarily have to have one of each.
All right, we'll leave that as an and or for right now. Thank you for letting me understand. And then I said include a concessions and media position, so that's singular. One person to...
it would be two positions.
Two positions, okay.
Because I think one of the things we recognized in the discussion was that that task could become quite... The concessions task alone, as we go through this, is generally going to be probably one of the busier pieces because that's the major revenue generator in this discussion.
All right, thank you for letting me jump in. That wouldn't be the first time.
So the positions on the executive council would be two co-chairs. We talked about the benefits of having a voting co-chair and a non-voting co-chair. I don't think anybody was necessarily in favor of one option or the other. Obviously, a treasurer and then a secretary. And then again, having the concessions and media manager on there. There's some notes in here that talks a little bit about the concessions fees, specifically that one of the main concerns was that because both organizations have different numbers of participants in their organizations, how they're going to create equity in terms of who works in the concessions during what time. One of the things we discussed was maybe setting an annual revenue goal of, and then we just threw $35,000 out there as a net revenue goal for a year, and then anything beyond that essentially would be split. So let's say, for example, if they made $37,000 net revenue, $1,000 would go directly to the facility, and then the other $1,000 would be split up among both organizations, and they could use that $500 each in this case. Towards scholarships, equipment, or other things specifically targeted for kids or participants that may not be able to otherwise afford those things. And so that kind of that kind of boosts that participation thing because they know that there's a potential benefit for their organization on the outset of that. Again, totally conceptual.
I'm sorry.
Can you explain the rationale behind co-chairs, which can be cumbersome versus, say, a chair vice chair that rotates each year or something like that? Just so you have one person that is...
And you, yeah, you rotate. One
that has a head of...
Just like the joint budget.
Just a... Just, I'm just curious as to what the thought process was there. I know probably equality between the two groups.
Well, I think that was the thought
process. Ultimately, that's what it was. But listen, at this point, where we're at, the beginning stages, you know, we're open to exploring.
Right. Just maybe it may be less cumbersome to have a chair co-chair that rotates each year.
So let's keep that as an option.
Chair vice chair that rotates is what you were saying.
Right.
Yeah. Well, vice chair that rotates each year.
Well, and frankly. In terms of the executive council, it wouldn't necessarily be if the intent of the chair, because we kind of had that discussion, and the intent of the chair vice chair is you'd have, it almost has to be established that they'd have to be one from each organization.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't necessarily have two NYB folks as chair vice chair.
No, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why I said one year NYB could be chair, the next year Little League is chair, just like we do on budget committee. We do like a citizen 1 year and a city councilor 1 year. And it works out great, really, because it is equitable when you think about it. It's every other year. And the chair is not president, so it's not like he can do things without everybody anyway. So it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and I think that would be more fleshed out in the bylaw, but I think that's certainly a good note. And I don't have any opinion on that?
Just going on ideas. Again, you will take these back and you will chew through them.
Good note. So then again, the media manager would be that other executive council position. And again, as this folds into the facility type thing, there'd be, you know, the flag days and the temperatures and all those other things. And so communication was a key component of what they wanted to focus on as a joint group. And then we kind of moved into, again, the benefits of the co-organization and sort of the management structure of that. The big thing was the annual coordination for both maintenance and operations, scheduling in terms of usage of the facility, and then, again, revenue generation for the actual park itself. We talked about a long-range planning need for five-year items that are not capital, and then some capital improvements. That's later on in this document. One of the major issues of consideration as we were going through this was access to the park, which creates additional wear and tear for practices and causes the most damage during practices. And part of that is a cultural thing, and so when the organizations come in, you know, you practice on it, then you repair the fields before you leave. Again, not having full access control of the facility, there will be folks that go out there and cause wear and tear from the public, but that's largely going to be reduced if both organizations have the entire field taken up almost all the time, right? So that, you know, they're utilizing the asset to the best of their abilities.
In terms of access control, was that really more of a physical control, like fencing with limited access, or was it control over the usage of the property, i.e. city owned versus leased? Because of this, which gets to a question, how was this approached? Was it approached under the premise of the property being leased to the 501c and no longer in city hands, so that we're more or less out of it, you guys can do what you want with it? That solves the access control issue.
So, if I can speak to that,
please.
I think the initial idea was the goal is to move to that lease option.
Okay.
I think that both organizations shared a desire to sort of want to beta test this over maybe a biennium,
okay,
to really flesh out the details of that. With under the auspices, they really want to move in that direction. I think that in terms of the access control, ultimately there is a desire once it goes to that lease function to look at physical control points and add those physical control points. But as of right now, if they're utilizing with the shared infrastructure, shared scheduling, all that, if they're utilizing the fields to their full potential each and every day, the amount of opportunity for folks from the general public to come in and use that asset is going to be severely reduced, right? So the O&M sort of group would have, you know, sort of first right of refusal of the space. And if they're not using it, obviously, then it's still a public asset. People can still use it. But if they schedule it out, it all out, the likelihood is going to be severely reduced that, you know, Johnny and his dad are going to come down to the volunteer and fill it up, so to speak.
Well, I think more the concern has been, I mean, there is that, but also about our other groups coming in and having games and activities on that space without having paid for it, without having any responsibility for putting things back to rights, and you know, not having concessions open to be able to capitalize on that revenue stream, things like that. So it's been seen as a liability, but also a lost opportunity. So what I'm hearing is that it would encourage those groups that want to come in and use the space, you're going to have to call ahead.
Well, for groups, I think that's generally a given. The concern was is sort of those one-off where, you know, dad and their kid are coming down, or mom and their kid are coming down and practicing, or people are just generally using the facility for their dog park. One of the biggest conversations that was on Monday was the amount of dog bags that are in the trash that they see and around there, and the amount of time they go, especially in the apartments, where the people in the apartments are just using the park as a dog park.
They clean it up?
Well, not always, right?
And there's a lot of bombs in the outfield on Field 10, which is big.
So
landmines.
But again,
yep.
Until they establish a lease, then they can't really establish physical control points.
That's right.
Okay.
And I think you guys recognize that as of right now. Right?
That's not necessarily true. We just simply have to come to the agreement that it actually is heading toward not being a public asset as it currently is, and we can maybe test that also.
Okay.
Because that may have some benefits. That may solve some of your issues.
And while it's not as similar to the Kaiser Heritage in this regard, because the Heritage Foundation owns the building,
right,
and leases the land, so access control physically is something that they do. Again, there's some opportunities where there's some precedent here on how this could be managed appropriately through the process. All right. Any other questions before? Okay, keep going.
So I think it probably won't happen this fiscal year because I think the elements are still in place from the original contract. But definitely, I think there's a lot of most of this that they want to try to kind of put in place organically to feel it out. The concessions was a big discussion, trying to get that concessions piece put in place this year. So the scheduling stuff, I believe, is already kind of underway. But ultimately, as they move into next fiscal year and next playing year, and probably more next playing year, because the fiscal year, I think, runs the middle of the season. So next playing year, having that discussion to eliminate slot fees so they can start to move in that direction, to do that full scheduling piece. The other big piece was cooperative scheduling, again.
So Matt, let's back up just a bit for a couple of people to understand the slot fees. By eliminating the slot fees, that brings McNary Youth Baseball back at 100%, which brings was for everybody, and they still have the scheduling, right? But they're there. There's not going to be any open fields during the playtime. They're there. They're utilizing the field. But by being there, that brings the revenue in the concession. Because by having all those fields full of ball players and parents, they're going to go to the concession stand, and that's where we wanted that realistic goal of 35K. But I think the only way to achieve that is to bring those slot fees and bring them all back.
Does $35,000 operate the facility for a fiscal for a year?
Yes.
Not capital.
Yeah, no, that's my concern there.
Yeah, it is.
If that's not enough to maintain the facility, then you've got to find another revenue source.
No, it's enough.
That's why.
It's enough to maintain it.
But that's it.
It's not enough to make any improvements.
Yeah.
And we didn't go beyond that in terms of organization, like if they're scheduling tournaments and things like that, how that would, we didn't go into that at all. But
so what is the revenue mechanism then? If there are no slot fees, how do you do that?
So you can do it a couple ways. I mean, you can approach businesses for sponsorships that are specific to complex, mm-hmm. one way to do it. There's the grant process that we can try and generate money through. There still will be slot fees that will generate funds from outside users. So there still will be a component coming in from MinLeague and from NAP and from some other folks.
But not these two.
They're just not the two primary tenants of that facility.
So that generates a question for me. You guys charge registration fees.
Correct.
I expect that will continue that as well too. But I would guess that built into that registration fee is funding to pay the slot fees.
We have that. We're actually you're
okay.
About half, you're half a page ahead of us.
You're one page ahead.
Okay.
So in the very next line is challenges with eliminating slot fees. Where does revenue come from? So one of the questions was, is there a chance to pay a per kid fee to eliminate the slot fee? So for example, the revenue they were already bringing in per kid, would they immediately just put that in the VOM bucket? I think their response to that was generally duh, right? To bring it back to the trailer park. Yes, they were happy with that idea. It was my white shirt, duh. Anyways, it's a pain. Sometimes I forget where I'm at. As Brad mentioned, sort of the additional revenue sources would be that per kid fee, which essentially sort of become a slot fee. Sponsorship, again, you're looking at your annual or semi-annual sponsorship, targeting specific fields, maybe those kinds of things. Clint's done that for years and done a really, really good job of bringing those folks in. By having the 501c3 component as an OM opportunity, it opens them up to additional grant opportunities, both with Oregon Parks and Rec, Rotary, Parks Board, Parks Foundation, and others. And then one of the big things that I'm going to talk about just down the line, just a touch, is one of the pieces of their 501c3 is hosting the district thing. I think Kaiser Little League does that right now, the 7th district.
District
7. So that's kind of another thing. They kind of do that as an in-kind piece. Right now, the city is putting forth $6,000 per year. The question was, is there an opportunity for more? And the goal was commensurate with the Heritage Foundation, so maybe a $20,000 to $30,000 per year. Again, question mark. You can't say no if you don't ask. Obviously, concessions is going to be the massive revenue generator. Discussion of possibly bringing in food carts and then doing a royalty off food carts. Again, the tournament would be the District 7 All-Stars, kind of serving as that 501c3 function. And then figuring out ways to utilize the 501c3 to create additional scholarship opportunities. And then, as Brad mentioned just a few minutes ago, external use fees for slot fees for NAP and NSA, other organizations that come in and use the facility. So, again, looking at that cooperative scheduling piece, they can very easily project usage for the season and say, okay, we know that during these times we're going to be slack on field use. So, again, that access control thing would be bringing in tournaments, bringing in those other opportunities, charging them revenue for the facility use, maximizing revenue off that to the O&M, but then again, having the field constantly used, which will in turn reduce the desire for people that aren't using the facility for the facility uses.
Okay, I'm going to press pause for a second because I want to go back up to the line talking about scholarships, and this is something that Heritage also dealt with. That organization was doing scholarships for a number of years. However, that was outside of the Bellcat model, but it's now been clarified. What we're talking about here is the complex and the operation maintenance of the complex. And I would ask that we look at scholarships as a programmatic expense and not a complex expense. So that would be something that each of the organizations would look at how to provide scholarships from internal funding, so we can keep that completely separate from the complex itself, which to me is an operation and maintenance of a physical facility. So does that make sense to you why it might be wiser to keep that separate as far as the conversations go? I think scholarships have to do with your programs.
I completely understand. I think one of the reasons why we were talking about the scholarship component was if this is going to be a 501c3, there has to be a certain component with the 501c3 that is, I imagine, supposed to be beneficial towards
Well, so, does it have to be a C3? Could it be a C6?
That I don't know. That's out of my pay grade.
Okay. So it could be a different type of not-for-profit that doesn't have that component. It's just something to think about.
However, the Heritage Foundation, the scholarships that they did were actually a pass-through. So if somebody wants to do it through the foundation to provide scholarships, that would be one thing. But to carve out operational funds for scholarships is something I would throw a caution in and more thoroughly discuss.
Well, and
for what purpose, you know, what the scholarships would be designed for. But
I think, and maybe going back to, as we're talking about this, the tournaments and then the scholarship piece was, if they're bringing in tournaments and the tournament fees are going to pay for usage and maintenance and all these other things, and they're bringing in some additional revenue, there might be a line where they go, okay, we're going to use 80% of this to go towards O&M, and then 20% gets divided among the two organizations specifically to target scholarships and some of those other things. So that so there's that additional sort of drive to want to bring in those opportunities.
So you're looking at this similar to the above, once you've reached your O&M target, that there's an incentive for the organizations to continue to do that because it can feed into the programmatic.
That's kind of how I recall it, Marlene. Is that, you know, that was the first meeting.
No, it was the first meeting, and that's, yeah, that's kind of what we talked about. Again, okay. You know, we have to have, being literally is a 501c3, and that's the way it, that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that has to have something, both of them. Okay, so that's where that component comes in. And we talked about that in the very first meeting. So these are just things that we still have to work out. And since we really don't know the whole, we need to really like research that a little bit too and find out exactly what we can do in that, so we can stay within that, but yet still, you know, do what we want to accomplish.
But that makes sense to me. Now to put in that same context with you hit your target and you keep on recruiting tournaments. There's something in it for you programmatically. And this goes back to the discussion we had months ago about splitting the concessions so that, you know, the organizations, volunteers or whatever, might be motivated. But if there's a different way to get to hit that target, make sure the complex has the funding coming in because everybody benefits from that. Let's bring another tournament. Ooh, then we can do some other really cool stuff.
Well, in your concessions, your $35,000, as I understand it, concessions is generally going to run the complex in a status quo.
That's right.
Basis. Your revenue for capital expenditures and those big improvements they really want is going to come from your sponsorships or tournament fees or other things that come in. And I think, as I understood it, you know, right now, if NYB decided to do a tournament, the funding goes to them. The Kaiser League does a tournament, the funding goes to them, right? I mean, you guys aren't necessarily sharing the pot.
That's correct.
Okay.
Right. So from entry fees, etc.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's correct. And so it would bring it all back to the complex, and so the complex, because they're an operational complex, the organization, let's say for example, ASA comes in, they charge $2,000 for the weekend. Mm-hmm. That goes into the complex fund. 80% of that goes directly to the maintenance and operations portion of that, and then 20% maybe goes to each organization.
So let's help me out here, just because I got stuck on that word, that a certain part of tournament fees would go to, again, the complex, because mm-hmm. there's a cost of operation, and then above a certain percentage, you guys would know that number, goes to the host organization.
That's
and
correct.
Then it goes to your programming. Your board decides how you're going to do that, mm-hmm. because that's, to me, that's programmatic, and that's your gig, mm-hmm. not mine. Mm-hmm. I'd be more comfortable with that approach, because I trust that your organizations are going to have programmatic goals,
right.
mm-hmm. that those dollars would go a long way toward.
And I think that was the original intent, even in the concessions piece, is as long as it's going towards the program goals that are targeted towards youth athletics, then, you know, whether they use it for equipment, whether they use it to pay for, you know, kids to play Little League or
whatever
have you, as long as it's going back into the program for the benefit of the kids, I believe was the intent.
That was the intent, yes.
Okay, so to create programmatic funds. So you have a certain cost of operation management that goes into running a tournament. Of the net, beyond a certain point, and if you are able to make this even bigger and better, that means your program is going to benefit. So there is that incentive to say the complex benefits and our program benefits. Yay, teams.
If I can, I'd like to go back. So
yeah.
The net on the concessions, I think, is the key piece. So they have their concessions goal. The net, anything beyond the net, is there. I think the tournaments, maybe, I think to establish a net there may be challenging. Instead, maybe.
At least for a few years until you get some experience.
Right. And so the thought here was that, let's say, if an organization comes in and they spend $1,000 to do a tournament, $800 goes immediately to O&M, the $200 gets split to the two organizations.
Right, and then that's something that, you know, we can work out, and of course that can be amended as we learn more. But to set a target, you know, an 80-20 split, and later on we'll find out that a 75-25 makes sense. So that's a negotiable piece, but at least start off with a benchmark.
This is the concept.
That's right. It's the concept, though, that, you know, how this
how we like to do it.
Yeah.
The other piece is just here and there.
But I prefer this be broadened to operations versus programmatic and programs.
I've got that right now.
All right, thanks.
So,
Phil?
Question I have in listening to this, and I think it's all great. If one organization or the other, I'm not going to single them out, doesn't matter, has 80% of the terms for the for a given year, the other organization is going to still realize the benefit of their 10% share. Or does that set up animosity between the organizations because one organization is scheduling more tournaments and feels like they should get more of that revenue? My feeling is, my guess is, it's probably not going to be either close every single year. Just something that occurs to me listening to the discussion. We don't want to set up an opportunity for bad blood in the future. See what I'm getting at? Does that make sense? And I don't know your tournaments now, if your organizations are doing about the same amount of tournaments, but if one organization has 80% of the tournaments for the year, just because of whatever the factors are, and 10% of the revenue generated from that tournament is going to the other organization's program, is that going to be a problem?
So, their internal, these are external tournaments as far as I understood. So their internal tournaments are their own tournaments, but if you're bringing an external organization, because it was a function of the facility and the O&M piece, then both the O&M facility essentially gets the revenue. Now, whether KLL hosted or NYB hosted or whatever, ultimately they're not necessarily it's the facility that's hosting it.
Yes.
And so, therefore, because
I was equating it to.
So, you're saying they're
hosting a tournament.
You're saying there are different types of tournaments. There are ones hosted by each of the organizations, potentially, that are going to pay a certain portion to the facility for its use, and then they get the proceeds. And then there are other tournaments that are hosted by the facility that aren't related to the programs, and then each program splits some of the revenues from that, or.
It's all getting a little convoluted when you start talking about different types of tournaments. We're reporting to Brad. I almost think that when it comes to tournaments, because, you know, when we run our Irish Festival tournament, we have a Little League component of it where we host Little League only teams, and then there's also like an open division that is a lot of outside teams. So it's kind of a hybrid type of a thing. I almost think the tournament should be treated where you pay. You're treated almost as an outside user.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I'm going
to
get.
And we pay slot fees, and the benefit to the organizations and mostly to the complex is what it generates in that concession stand.
See,
it's not about the entry fees. It's not about that piece of it. It's we're treated as outside users for tournament weekends, whether it's an NYB. KLL,
I like that.
Yeah, that way you're paying your fair share to the facility and you're gaining whatever slot fee benefit you can.
And we minus that from whatever swag we get out for the tournament, that's where we get our net.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the absolute biggest winner
is the
concession. Ergo.
And the facility, which keeps it
wonderful.
Which gives you guys basically a discounted rate on your tournaments.
No, not really.
Your organization, if you were to pay a slot fee for your organization and concessions comes in, you're going to get a portion of that. So you're getting that benefit. And a portion of the slot fee for that is also going to the organization, correct? No, the slot fee stays strictly in.
That's paying for all the maintenance, so all of
yeah.
stuff necessary to.
Yeah. Your chalk, your paint, the gas, your yep. mow, the gas.
Yeah, I think that's totally workable. You guys can figure out how to make that work.
We can make it work. Maybe not tonight.
No,
but.
I just need to get my. I just need
to get my. But we got the concept. This is the concepts for bringing you.
Well, now you're hearing our questions, which yeah. will help generate additional knowledge. All right. Any further questions on this? We'll kind of, and then we'll let you guys chew on the next iteration.
Well, no, there's still more.
Yes, I know.
More.
All right. Proceed.
Okay.
We need to move forward.
So, again, it may not be in perfect order. One of the big things we discussed was the management structure. The sort of sacred cow in this is to remember this is all about the kids. It's not about individual egos. It's not about individual philosophies. It is about the kids, no matter what. Of the management structure, obviously, there need to be the bylaws with the roles of the board, turnover requirements, staggered rollover. So, Chris, going back to, I think, your discussion where we did the staggered rollover. Equity, again, a big piece. Within that, bylaws would be a code of conduct, expectations of use and health of the complex and the fields. Equipment management, sign out accountability, badging for volunteers for each league. Now, which MYB says, no, you guys.
I said, yeah. That should be more of a, I think we take that out of the parks complex piece. That should be, that's more of a league.
You know, I don't have page 3.
A league issue.
Okay.
It's not fair to require one organization to badge all their volunteers. Just because it's part of the complex, and that's just something that you do.
So one of the questions that actually, as we were talking about this, it came up in my brain, and I apologize for asking a question outside the context of the notes, was when you guys are doing your volunteers, whether it's coaches, whether it's umpires, how much of a background check are you actually going through? So, for example, I mean, if somebody's got, like, if they've got any felonies and stuff like that, are you still around to come out and be coaches and all that kind of stuff? I mean,
depends on the situation. Depends on the type of violation.
Okay.
Crimes against children is an automatic no. I mean, there's no negotiation.
For casualty.
You guys require a safe sport certification.
We require heads up concussion training. So all of our volunteers that we working with kids have to volunteer or have to have the concussion training certificate. And the background checks that we have done are very thorough. I think we did like 250 background checks last year.
Do you guys do the same background checks?
Yeah. We just write that down, Safe Sport. It's an organization, it's a national organization that has some training and testing for coaches specifically, and it talks a lot about interactions between adults and kids, and what's appropriate and what isn't, and it's just good training.
Mm-hmm.
Something you might want to think about.
Sure.
Safe sport.
So, Brad, just to verify, for all of your coaches, assistant coaches, all of your volunteers, if you're on board, if you're a coach, whatever, they can all have these background checks.
Everyone on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're in our organization, we started this last year, where we require the coaches and volunteers, if you're going to be on the field with a kid, then you have to also have your badge. You don't have to have it around your neck, because frankly, I tried wearing mine around my neck. I turned the wind blew with the first step, and it's all over the place. So as long as you have any coach's badge, should anyone come up and say, if there's any concern, hey, can I see your badge? If you don't have a badge, you're not supposed to be on the field. So that's something we implemented last year when actually expanding the business. So it's got your picture, it's got a league with a logo on it. It's just how you guys are raising it. That is, and you can only get a badge if you have a clear background check.
You should still have it.
Cool.
Hey, we just bought the badge and machine, so we can work with that.
Do you really want to do it?
So,
it's expensive, though.
I see two things here that got kind of folded in. So, code of conduct says the expectations of use and the health of the fields and complex. So, what I'm reading here is the health, safety, and conditions of the physical asset, which then goes to equipment management and sign-out accountability. The separate but extremely important component goes to the line about badging for volunteers and setting the the requirements for all users to comply with, either these two or any external user shall comply with these conditions in order to be able to sign up to use the field. So I'm hearing these are two separate but very important things. So I just want to make sure that I'm hearing that correctly, that we have the facility portion of it, and then we have the conditions, the organizational, but the conditions under which we require all organizations to operate. Is that kind of what, did I have it right? These are two things.
Well, in practice right now, Kaiser Lilly is the organization that uses the badging. I don't think NYB does. I think to make it a shall to use the facility could be problematic for external users for tournaments and things like that. I think that...
We talked about removing that kind of from this list because it doesn't really belong here.
But...
Yeah, that was the organization specifically.
The badging specifically, but the concept in general, are we going to be asking the... this organization to be setting the requirements for use of the fields in terms of safety of for the minors.
To set the standard.
Right, to set that standard and then have options for that compliance, which is separate from the safe use of the facilities, which is you don't grind on the stairway and you don't turn backflips in the outfield or something like that. Do you see how that, to me, might that's different?
Right, but my whole expectation thing was for the outside people coming in too is that there has to be an expectation sheet if you're going to, you know, you're going to bring your group in to use the field. These are the expectations.
Should be part of their contract.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I was coming in too, because the code of conduct, these guys already know the code of conduct. And we can still put it in there, obviously, you know that. But I think my whole thing was is that we have to worry about the outside use. That was a concern, the outside use. And we need to have a code of conduct for the outside use, right? Because it's still your field.
For
right?
them to follow.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. For the outside use to follow.
Yes.
You can't have alcohol there. You can't be smoking.
Right. Well, it's still a city park, so you can't have alcohol there.
But those things could be in the contract to just remember these are our rules.
Oh.
Well, yeah. You can't say, well, nobody told us.
No dogs in the park. Park and designated areas only.
Treat each other with respect.
Things like that. The one piece that I don't know if we could even enforce would be, like, see, when I think about code of conduct, expectations for use and health of the fields, so the physical asset is, when you're done, it does not take long to rake and drag. I mean, it will take you 10 minutes to rake and drag, but just that one act can save a lot of hard work later on.
That's not really a code of conduct. That's a procedure requirement.
It should be. But for an outside user, can we realistically expect them to do that?
I think you should. And I think that should be part of the contract.
And if so,
fees,
yeah. Yes, exactly.
But does that come? If they're paying an outside user fee, does that include the maintenance of the field that's
up to you. But that's up to you.
You put that in the contract.
I think you could have a reduced rate if they agree to do those things, which would be what you want normally, which your normal fee, or a higher rate if they walk away from the field and don't
do
those things, and you have to do it, then you.
So if they give it back, then it's good. They get their deposit back. I would say my only thing is if you're going to pay a higher rate. Well, it's $100. I don't give a crap. I'm going to leave this thing just nasty, right?
Yeah. And so it creates a creating deposit that's high enough to create pain.
I've been cold off.
And you'll have compliance. You'll have 100% compliance.
So these are, again, we're getting a little bit into the operations, but my question had to do with this structure, this governance structure, is the expectation that the requirements for the physical use of the facility and the expectations for setup, cleanup, et cetera, this is the organization that would set those ground rules that everybody would follow. Is that what you had in mind? So
yes.
And then on the code of conduct, the sportsmanship, the security for our minors and so forth, is that something that do you believe that this will be the board to address the general guidelines required of all organizations using the field?
I don't think that we can.
Okay, that's why I want to get some clarity.
The one thing that they do have to provide is, you know, if you're going to come out and play on those fields, if you're going to hold a tournament, or you're playing games, you have to have proof of adequate insurance.
Right. So those are things that's a common practice. But when we're talking about the state sports and other, those are that got programmatic, and so that's why I'm pushing on the question. While it makes sense and it's a very appropriate thing for each organization to do, we have to be clear about what this governing organization can require of all organizations doing this. And if that is something that can be required, I would encourage that overarching board to do exactly that. So you don't get half-baked groups coming in going, yeah, sure, helmets, you know, those are just guidelines.
Right.
Not on this field, they're not.
That reason, I was listening to the discussion and talked about the badges. Maybe think of this question. Do you, in your vision, expect that all members of this board, of this new organization, or 501c, whatever it is, will be made up of members of the boards of the other organizations? Or is there a chance that a random citizen could be on
another organization?
Very good. Organization.
No, it's a list.
There's citizens, there's council, there's all sorts of folks.
That was
the Secretary of Treasury. Where do they come from?
I think the board has positions, and any one of those members could be one of those positions. Okay.
The reason I ask that, back to the badges, should there be badges for those board members who have the authority over the complex so that they can be easily identified during any given tournament, game night, whatever, to step in and say, no, you can't do that on this field, for instance. Just a question.
Yes, well, it's certainly a valid question, and whether it's a badge or
identification
in some way, like what we currently use, we love Kaiser Lily board shirts, and you know, whoever's director on duty that night, you're expected to wear one of your board shirts.
And that's much better than badge.
Identify
hands.
Yeah,
but
you're absolutely right, we should have some kind of an identifier.
So something to identify the authority
staff or something.
Whatever term you want to go on. Just something that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who are you? Well, actually, I do own the place.
It's the guy with the beard.
Well, anytime you have an outside group coming in, you're still going to have somebody there anyway. You're not going to let them have a full ride of the whole park without somebody being there. So.
Yeah.
But they have to
get there. But you need to have somebody that being there needs to be identified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big Richard, that says complex manager.
Or complex.
And what occurred to me, what Dan really thought of, that says, who do you think you are to tell us what we can't?
I'm the common.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And clearly identify that. That's what got my thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not
that that ever happened in
my director 97 hat.
So,
thank you for letting us clarify this. Okay.
So
are we good with?
Yes.
Okay. So these are some of these moving forward. We've got these clarified. This is another kind of subtopic within this.
So one of the.
Okay.
One of the things that came out of this was, again, as I mentioned earlier, there's been a schism, there's been some bad blood over the few years. In order to heal and allow this to move forward, there's been some discussion about renaming the complex.
Love it.
So this, as I say here, as we stated, this could aid in healing to both NYB and Kaiser Lily as it established a new identity. Maybe something like Kaiser Baseball Softball Complex or what have you. That would be a direct tie to the new organization. What I heard from both organizations was the most important thing to them from that was to memorialize where this started,
sure,
where it went, And one of the things we talked about was the one side of the concession stand where there's nothing on it but a wall. You can almost do kind of really complex, put all the key players and all the folks that built this, you know, every, you know, championship team that came out of that field and all those things.
A founder's wall.
A founder's wall. Well, and to celebrate the history of everything that Kaiser Little League Fields has been. Because I think that, because for a lot of people, this piece of this conversation alone is going to bring everybody out of the woodworks. Because there is so much ownership and so much tied back to Kaiser Little League complex that it's going to be very hard for some folks to swallow.
It's going to be hard, but they have to understand that this is, you know, the 21st century. We do have two organizations that now utilize that park, and we don't want ownership to just be, you know, this is what we're trying to do, this is what we're trying to achieve.
The nature of youth sports has changed.
That's right. And the whole...
Fundamentally.
And you know what? As long as we memorialize what it was, what it became, I think that's just going to... You're still going to have those guys or, you know, whatever, but we have to move forward. We have to move forward in the healing. This is for the kids. Again, this is still for the kids. We're going to move forward. We want it to be a successful program. We want the park to be successful, not even a park, the Little League, or whatever it is, the complex, to be for the kids, you know, and to move forward. And this is a big piece of that. And this may get the biggest argument out of people, but I think this is really what we need to do to move forward.
Until they see their name on the wall, then it'll be fine.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be easier to go to their high school in Kaiser than it is to rename this complex. But that's
well, I think that... So one example that I have is when you go to... My wife's hometown, it's a small town in western Kentucky, Owensboro, Kentucky. You go down to their park where the Little League plays, and I think it's like called Ronald Coleman
Field.
So it's named after a person, but they've got this great like wall there, and it lists. And this is a program from a small town that has sent more than one team to the Little League World Series out of the region from a tiny little town. But they got through it. But it didn't used to be Little League; it used to be Pony Ball. So you've got different organizations on one wall that show all the success that this small little community has had in youth baseball. Not just Little League. Yes, they've been great Little League. Because
well,
they kicked butt. They pony as butt. So, that's in the name.
That's right.
That's a good marketing slogan.
But I mean, I think we can all agree on that, and I know that we can all agree that we're probably going to have some backlash. But I think the wall thing, like Matt said, I think that's really the way to go because that memorializes what it was, what it's become, and how we need to move forward. And after about 6 months to a year, no one's even going to complain anymore. So I think we can get through that.
I think it would be a bigger. I think this is going to be a breeze, quite honestly, and for one reason. I think if Canary Youth Baseball was attempting to rename the complex, that would be a big deal. But if Kaiser Little League is
the one that's
is also interested in creating this new thing that everybody benefits from, there is your tie to the history of it. And I think that paves the way.
Yeah, no pressure. Thanks, Chris.
It's all for
you.
That's a great point, but also it's a great piece to show the community that you're bringing this forth together.
Okay.
It's not kind of only one renaming the facility.
No,
it's the youth sports advocates, youth baseball advocates of the community that are bringing forth the idea to rename the facility.
Because then it's no longer... It's no longer Kaiser Little League.
It's not branded
baseball.
It's not branded.
The baseball complex that these people play in,
right?
That these groups use.
Well, here's the other plus.
I think the community would we'll embrace that.
Yeah.
I think we'll be happy with that. There'll be some naysayers, of course, but I think overall, you know.
Well, here's the other plus. Because you're naming it baseball and softball. Now, the girls, that is going to be very important for inclusion. So I'm liking it a lot.
Curling in there also.
That was just for example.
Sport feature.
I'm in.
Right.
Dan?
Thank you,
Dan.
Curling.
When the big water tower was built up by the big field, I said, hey, we need to put Kaiser Little League on there. Whatever the new complex is, can we put that name across there?
No, it's a sign. It's a sign.
Is that Marion County or is that ours?
That's ours.
That's why there's nothing on the elevator thing.
Yeah,
it's a sign.
Can we just do a variance?
We already talked about variances for ourselves.
You're doing it for the sign out here.
What
a
good
idea.
Councilman, do you want to revise the sign code?
No.
So what if you don't put text on it?
I would say another word in front of that, but I won't. It's wrong.
It's a big white ball.
No problem with that. That would be art.
What if it's a constant special event sign and they just pay for it?
No.
You have to
wait
for the whole
sign. Walk away from the table. You want the steam come out in 8 years? Oh,
yes.
He's in China. Never mind.
He's not here. He's in China.
So.
Okay. Did we?
I do have another question.
Yes.
Back when I was players, we registered 1,200 boys. Where are you with your registration now?
Even though we're near 1,200 boys, we're currently sitting at about 400 kids for downership. Or softball, for whatever reason, softball membership down.
You have 400 kids, and where are you?
I don't know. Right now, last year, we were just under 400. I think we had 370, something like that.
You get a lot of people to the last moment. I mean,
so we're
still taking time to have more kids
than
half of
right now.
What we used to have years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that didn't include the girls.
Play lacrosse. Play soccer.
I do play lacrosse.
Yeah.
And soccer.
So,
yeah.
Baseball is
as competitive as Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to total up the number of kids that are playing in this town, it's still the same. But it's not in our big organizations.
The nature of sports is different. People are playing soccer year long in club environment.
You still have 800 or 900 kids using that complex playing ball. So
a different name
for the complex.
Hundreds of girls.
Maybe something that recognizes the origination of the complex and the Oregon National Guard worked to build the field. They used the Kaiser Oregon National Guard or National Guard baseball complex.
There is I think Field 3 is
understand that. Something that memorializes the history. Just a thought.
Okay, let's move on.
Or you sponsor the name of the field every year and make a bunch of money.
All right, so we just gone way into. I'd rather
move on.
So I'm going to bring us back to what we're doing here. Chris is going to have to head out the door. Is there anything that you want to kind of wrap up with before you head out the door?
We do have our long range and capital of Christmas here, though.
Okay, so that's what we're going to.
That's what we're going to.
I read it, Ed, by the way.
Okay, good.
Okay.
You read the end of the story?
I did.
So, just real quick for food.
Yeah, so I think we're good on this portion. We've asked a lot of questions. That's a great discussion. That will give you guys some guidelines for your next round of discussions as you, again, continue to put some finer points on this. Anything else on this particular section before we go into the long-range needs? So this was about the management structure.
Yep.
Anything you think we missed egregiously or would...
No, and this just brings up more things for us to discuss.
Okay. Next wrap. All right. Long-range needs.
So this is just pretty quick. The long-range and capital needs, again, recognizing that we talked about that for really long in this discussion. Long-range needs is new irrigation system and drainage, parking lot improvements. Capital improvements, lease option piece, which we're talking about again, that kind of even lease option right now could be access controls specifically for the middle four fields. We talked about that. That's kind of where that note is. Big one is ADA accessibility improvements. The field six needs total renovation, infield, outfield, bullpens, new fencing, and backdrop. Dugouts throughout the system, new equipment, mowers, tractor and gear, and so on. Lights for the wheel, which has been a project, a long, outstanding project that Clint really wants, and other opportunities, maybe like batting cages, things like that. And so those are kind of the quick spitball discussions we had on Monday.
Sure.
That would be a large capital investment, but that would definitely do the drainage issues.
Remind me what field is field six.
It's a big it's the flex field.
That's what I thought. And the reason I asked that question is if total renovation of that has to include drainage. Because the main drain went right through the field.
Yeah, but
that's why
it's actually okay on that field. The drainage is not a problem down there. It gets up above because the main drain is going.
But if you do
it, my point is we need to make sure that the drainage system works before you rebuild that field because the main pipe goes right through.
Right.
That's my only concern.
So,
do you guys know that? I just want to make sure that I'm in the right field.
You're on the right
field. I'm in the right field. Okay.
The last big piece in terms of planning and discussion on this was both organizations expressed a strong desire to hold a joint board meeting. As I mentioned in the email to Bill and Chris and Kathy, we will run into some issues of a full quorum because we'd have two members from you and Lisa and then Bo and Ryan. And then, obviously, if I'm there, then we have a quorum. So we got to kind of figure that out. We could do it as a work session of this group.
One of the other things that maybe we could do is, why couldn't we, Matt, make a presentation to each of these boards before we bring them together? Make a presentation to each of these boards. You don't want to do that separately? Do the same kind of presentation of what our thoughts are? Or do you guys want to do that same presentation to your own boards and then come together?
Or do we do it together?
Yeah, exactly. What is going to be to us the benefit that we can get the most?
Well, the idea in line kind of what you're thinking was basically take these notes, give them to board organizations, they can give it out to their respective boards, and then they can have some idea, some time to chew on it and sort of come up with questions and concepts, and then really when they bring them together,
then we're
going to
come back.
I think as you hear from both boards, it's going to solidify many of these points, and I think it's going to bring up other things that the four of us, or the three of us, really didn't even conceptualize.
Right, so then we would come back as a group of four, though, with what they bring back to us from those groups, then bring it back to this group? I mean, I think after the
joint board, we would just come back with the notes that came from that and present to this group. I don't necessarily think it's, unless it's so substantive that comes out of that discussion that we have to regroup.
How well informed are the rest of your boards?
Yeah. Sorry?
How well informed are the rest of your boards and kept up about this concept?
About any of this that we were discussing?
Very little. I mean, they know around my involvement in this task force, but very little about
what's kind of
how it's gonna settle.
I think it's settled well with our board, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, we're a group of like-minded people who, I don't think it's going to be much of a problem at all. I think the reality is it's going to come down to details of what the governance structure looks like. But again, I don't think our board is going to be a part of that. I mean, once they sign off on this and whoever's a part of whoever's assigned to this can work out there. So I don't think it's going to be a problem personally for us.
Okay.
So I gave a full, basically kind of a full presentation on what has gone on to this point to our board probably 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it was generally well received. We had a couple of folks on our board that were very concerned about working with NYB, but that's something that we can work out. But by and large, the bulk of the group was very supportive.
Excellent.
I think listening to the discussion here, this concept of having a joint board meeting with this group or a portion of this group is really the only choice. Because right in doing that, you're setting up the dynamic of working together.
Right.
For the boards to see physically see the other board, that we're all in one place at one time having the same discussion. Everybody's hearing the same comments, the same answers, the same questions, and there's no confusion. I think that goes a long way to setting up good dynamics moving forward, as opposed to having members of this group meet with each board individually.
Well, I think it also shields the two of you from the boards that somebody says, hey, you saw the same
I'll be the bad guy. I mean, one of the things I heard was they really didn't necessarily want anybody that's already kind of been involved in this process, is what I understood. And they wanted a very neutral party to sort of moderate it. You know, so it's kind of like maybe me or James, in terms of, you know, not council members, not city staff, not.
Which I'm fine with. I mean, I'm fine with that. This isn't about us.
No, I agree. But to have a very neutral party, I think, is going to be helpful for both organizations to feel comfortable to dialogue. And if it's not a council member or staff member or even, you know, whatever, then I think it's going to be they're going to be a lot more comfortable being very real with their thoughts and comments.
Are you talking about leading that probably the most important component of having a neutral party up at the front is to make sure that we keep people from bitching about the past and keep everyone on task, looking forward, and finding solutions rather than placing blame.
Okay.
Yeah. So the logistical issue, which Matt was alluding to, is the fact that in convening that meeting, you are convening a quorum of this task force.
If one of us is gone, does that eliminate quorum?
I understand that. There's 7 of us, correct?
There are only nine. So you would need 5 for a quorum.
Mm-hmm. So if you...
Well, that would be 5.
And that would be 5.
And 5.
So, well...
There's no problem with that.
One, two, the mayor can convene this task force to begin with, and I'm going to pick on Matt as a neutral party,
James.
As a neutral party, because neither one of you have involvement in either meeting right now.
Why
don't
you correct me from the other?
Okay.
Well,
there'd be two board meetings, so you're going to be both at your board meetings.
This task force that's not a quorum, and have, you know, the mayor.
But you have Lisa and Ryan.
Yeah, they don't have to be there because they're a joint board meeting.
It's a joint board meeting. So on board, so they're going to be there.
Yeah,
unless one of them bows out.
So, but
Tracy says
it's a work meeting.
Just notice it as a meeting.
Just notice it as a meeting. So it would have to be. Not only would your boards convene, but also this task force would convene, and then we would turn over the agenda to however you guys want to do it, but that's the only way we want to make sure we comply with open meeting law.
If we notice it, the desire I think would be to do it under a work session versus, because I think under a work session we can limit, and we don't necessarily want to limit, the concern is that
we can't pass anything.
But also it's
information else that we're doing now.
What I think the concern was is not necessarily turning it for a forum for everybody and their brother to come in that aren't involved with the boards and try to dive into this process.
Right.
That's my concern. To provide an opportunity for public testimony.
Okay.
Even in a regular session. Okay. That is not.
It's not for a lack of transparency. It's not for a lack of desire for public input, because I think that it's very important. But we're dealing with two organizations. It's a very sensitive issue, and I think that if we spend half a meeting just hearing from Johnny that played baseball there once upon a time and really doesn't want to change the name of it, then
if this is structured as a work session,
I'm trying to phrase it so Eric doesn't make me sound like a jerk in the newspaper.
So that's why I'm going to grab the floor back now. Thank you. And if this is noticed as a work session, the agenda being a joint board meeting of Kaiser Little League and McNair Youth Baseball, and that's the extent of the agenda, right there. Because then, since it's a joint board meeting, you are setting your agendas for that, for your organizations, And that makes it very, very simple. And let people know this conversation is happening, but then you will set your agenda.
And if anybody
representing the task force at that point, we would represent ourselves.
So you're
still members of the task force.
But you're still members of the task force. Yeah.
So I
get the confusion. So the idea is that we convene a work session and they turn it over to you guys to operate into your board meeting.
So then, Madam Mayor, people were to attend the work meeting. They could come back then and have that open discussion under appearance of interested citizens at the next meeting, specifically of this group.
That is correct, if they so chose. Yes.
Would that meeting need a moderator?
That is up to the two boards as they plan their agenda to indicate how they like to run that, and that would be then the agenda you would set for your joint board meeting. On the city side, all we are doing is noticing that we are having a work session, which is the joint board meeting of the two organizations. We're not going to set your agenda. We're not going to determine how you're going to do that. You guys are going to have to put together an agenda for your meetings anyway, so you'll do a joint one. And that will keep it very simple, and then the control of the flow for that, you can determine, and please work with Marlene and Matt and any of us on any questions on how you feel that we might be helpful in making that happen. Okay?
But you and Ryan being in presence would set the tone. Mm-hmm.
So, and for the record, in the discussion, when they did ask for moderator, you know, since James and I are generally the neutral parties here, but neither of us have kids involved in either organization, did volunteer, and they both felt comfortable with that, but James, if you're interested as well, that's, I mean, you guys reach out to either one of us, let us know you want to do that, if in fact you want a moderator.
Your call.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I actually know a local individual that does a pretty good job of moderating meetings, and I might be able to get to volunteer for this. If a true neutral party, as neutral as it can be, not a member of the task force, not a member of either board, just a thought. Let me know.
Okay.
Work through there. Let me know. I'll be happy to ask.
Thanks, Bill.
You know.
Awesome. We have many resources in this community. All right. I like the plan. Ms. Coleman.
Can I get a little clarification on the concessions part? Now, right now, who's running the concession for this year at this point?
Logan.
And is it you doing like you did last year, or what you said? No deviation. So, if under this agreement, I'm assuming that concessions part would start next season, or not this season. And
we had talked a little bit, and you and Ryan and I talked a little bit about possibly trying to roll that in this year because the concessions piece is the major revenue generator to see how it functions.
Yes.
Now that's between your guys' boards. But we did talk about that as kind of the initial beta piece for this year, but in terms of this season.
To at least set up a committee so we can begin to understand what's going to need to happen next year.
Right.
Get a jump on knowledge.
Right. Yeah, I see in here possible delivery and food cards. Is that something that you're trying to do in addition to the concession or in place of?
I envision it as in addition to.
So maybe put the food trucks back in the south parking lot or something.
Down south parking lot. I know there's a concrete pad over there by Field 3 that used to have a concession stand on it. That might be an area. We could put it in a number of different areas down there. But
is there power in most different places in the field that can handle that?
So that's something we'd have to.
So
I'm sorry. What was the
verify?
For a local food vendor must be on a solid surface.
Okay.
That is requirement under Marion County Health.
All right.
Let me tell you about those guys. They don't want to give up any of their profit. That's the only thing about that.
Yeah.
Because so. It is so important to getting the funds into the field. And
It was just an idea that was going out.
Right. And that was very attractive, but it absolutely must be on a hard surface.
So I have no problem at all with hiring someone to run and manage that concession thing, mm-hmm. and I think whoever does that is entitled to a decent profit for all the time that they have to put into it. But I think if it's run right, like I think it was run pretty well last year. Mm-hmm. I think the profits and everything that was done last year were some of the best we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that if it's run right and you just have one person in charge of that and then work together for all the help for it, I think that we could be a lot better off than trying to fight over stuff.
And we actually anticipated that in the discussion just a little bit. I think we talked about, you know, if there were any sort of paid position, so to speak, on the executive board, the concession manager could end up being that person, because their whole goal in life for this is to generate revenue through the concessions and stuff like that. And so, you know, we said, you know, if they're going to need to spend all the time and effort and everything, that was one of the discussions that was, you know, certainly brought to the table. We didn't note it in the notes here, but it was definitely a topic of consideration.
And then my last question is, how do the fields get scheduled?
Okay. We would have a point person on that committee that would handle all fields. It would be taken out of the hands of the leagues themselves. It would be run by a person
that's
on the committee.
So let me ask a question before we convene or end or we can go away. Anyway, speak. What, now that you've seen the work that the four of us have done, and the three of them since I was absent for the last one, do you want, what's the next steps, I guess? I want to know what's the next steps. Do we want to not meet again as a small group? Do we want to see what's going to come out of this joint work session we do with them? Or what is it we hope to achieve right now? I mean, I think we did a lot of work, brought a lot of great ideas, but how do we proceed now?
So what I hear is that the next thing will be the work session, which will be the joint board meeting. We also have a next meeting scheduled, or do we not?
We do March something.
It's not on here. Which is
right. I thought it was.
There's not one.
I have one on my calendar.
You got one in mind.
I talked to Debbie. Yeah. She said that this takes place of the one in March. March 5.
Oh, this was the one that's taking place in March.
So
I thought we had one toward the end of March. That's why I guess.
Somebody said that you didn't want one in March because of this.
Thank you, Eric.
It's clearly tough.
Yeah,
oh,
it's getting more difficult. And also,
I thought that's what she said the reason was.
And spring break at the end of the month kind of runs into our season, and then once the season starts, it's...
This week I've had baseball Monday, Tuesday, now Thursday and Friday, and that's out of here.
That was the question I was going to ask. Is it reasonable to think that you could convene a joint board meeting now? And I don't mean literally now, but I mean... Your season's kicking off.
That was
you guys are small, but I get that.
How many members are
there? It's going to be. It's going to be tough.
17
off right now. I mean, we're going to establish a team mode in this.
So are you not having any more? How do you guys aren't going to have any more board meetings than the rest?
Board meetings you're going to have for the next few months to deal with your own organization's business.
So here's the thought.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
But I believe that. I'm sorry, Pat. I didn't mean to step over.
No, oh, please go ahead.
I believe that we can get it done. I think that we can bring the two groups together because this is a priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As it should be. Having been on those boards in the past, I feel like we're coming at you.
So just talk to take it on Monday.
It's really realistic to think we can get it done.
No Monday.
That's all.
Yes.
You guys know what it's like. I just...
I think we can.
I mean... Ideally, clearly that would be the best because you got the momentum going right now with this group on this topic.
Mm-hmm. As long as it's not a Monday, because Mondays are city councils and things like that. The other night, if we get on, the other night, if we had something going on, we could bag out after this because this is important.
I know we typically do our board meetings on Sunday nights, and they typically do their board meetings on Sunday nights for the night. So if we find a Sunday that it works for Sunday for both groups, we'll get most of our members. We're not going to be able to get
that's
all, like, 17 of us.
We can just bring the recorder?
Yeah.
Good
luck.
Okay. Yeah, so we can run the recorder. You guys don't have to hear. One of us could run the recorder.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, I just want to make sure that we've got most of our folks there.
I have this.
Well,
we can't
trust
you.
All right. So, next step are...
My head's still saying it's only happened.
next steps then are to get a joint board meeting scheduled, and then the work session. And it sounds like it will be a Sunday evening. So I know that's going to be challenging, but this is going to take a work of moving heaven and earth. Anyway,
so
number two, there will be a follow-up, I believe, of the work group to
put together.
Yeah, take all the information from tonight and from that into the next iteration.
Can we keep that as a tentative? If we don't need it, we don't need it, and we can just bring everything back here.
Yes.
So I mean, again, if there's nothing so earth shattering, if we go through this and everybody's like, "This is the greatest thing since sliced bread," there's really not a need to reconvene the subcommittee. But
then we're going to find a time to get this group together, because I don't want to lose this momentum that we've
that's
got right
thing,
now.
That's
going to be hard. Because once we've had that joint work session if we can reconvene this group to take all that good stuff and then have something in place and then a plan for the beta test for this year, then we could reconvene at the end of, so I think we talked about August, didn't we?
Whenever is it your guys'
when you come up, when do you come up for air?
September, October?
End of July.
Oh, end
of August.
Okay.
So
Bill, is winter season in? Mid-July?
So let's say we do the joint work the work session. We try desperately to convene this group one more time after that to make sure we've captured all of the information and the steps.
Like soon?
Yes.
Within a month or so?
Yeah.
What I'd like to ask the two representatives of the board, can we pick a date like in the next 5 days where they can commit to having us a date for the thing? Because what I don't want to have happen is we walk away from here. So if you guys can commit by, let's say, next Wednesday or next Friday, and you've got a date figured out between the two boards.
We want to ring in a date.
I think that's a little bit of an ownership thing on you guys to talk, figure out when we can do the joint meeting.
That's a thought.
But what was going through my mind, and I'm thinking about these guys and their swap, and they're going into their season. They have board meetings on Sunday night. That sounds like that's established, because that's a night that is available in the week. So if we can schedule this next task force meeting on a Sunday night, it might allow it to happen sooner rather than trying to fit it in on a weekend. That's just a thought.
Tracy's giving him the nod.
Well, and generally, until you guys get really, really deep in the season, Saturday nights could work too, right?
There's lots of tournaments that our guys play on Saturday, so eventually Sunday nights is when all the games are all wrapped up. So.
Well, but what I'm saying is it's still turning dark by 6. So it's still turning dark by 6 right now for the next month and a half.
True. No, yeah, but it's immediate for this next immediate one. That would be fine.
Well, even for the meeting of the task force.
So
that's my point, yeah.
So let's say, would it be reasonable then to say when you schedule the work session that the next Sunday night? Thank you.
Yeah.
A week later we bring this group together. Is that too fast to turn around the information? Or then we wrap it up, and the agenda is a wrap-up of what we've heard, and then also what we want to beta test during the season, what are our objectives to beta test during the season, and then we will set a meeting for August at the end of the season to get this work going again for...
to have it so we can start it next year.
To wrap up this task force. With the recommendations, because there's going to be things we learned this season through the beta test that are going to inform our final work product that will go to the council.
Is this something that Shannon has to put together?
He will be involved in the final work product.
Not
at this point.
Tracy just asked me a question, and I was going to ask the same thing. Meeting location of a joint board meeting. Where?
Can we do it here?
We had our last joint board meeting here, right?
Can we do it here?
Is this a neutral enough site?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I just need to ask a question.
You just need space. So
we need more space. Unless we've done this.
Yeah.
Space.
Usually Sunday night should be fine.
Now
Just get us a date as soon as possible so Tracy can check the schedule to make sure there's a date in Chambers too.
Conference Chambers might make more sense. I'm just The reason I say that is because we can put I can take a lot of this and I, as much as we do all the PowerPoints, I can digest this into, you know, because I think if you're a kinesthetic learner like myself, being able to see it is going to be very important to some folks. And I think if with the discussion points, we can flow it that way, or at least have a projector.
How many people are on your board?
I think we have 17.
So there's no way we can.
17 is going to be tight
here. We're not doing it here.
It's going to be difficult to count the chambers without the member of the screen behind the dais.
That's right. I mean, yeah,
well, fine, but we don't have to have anybody sitting in the dais because we have the audience.
We have one board on one side of the room and one on the other.
Hey! Time. Tracy said if we want a screen and projector, just say so, it'll be done. If we need the larger room, because we can open up these walls for double the size, just give us the number of people and what AV you want, and Tracy will do, and her staff will do the magic.
I'm going to make it easy.
Yes, I am. So there.
So,
layperson, putting myself away from my professional life, putting myself in my personal life, I really think these rooms are much more conducive to meaningful dialogue than the council chambers.
I agree.
The council chambers is intimidating. If you have, it's not to me, I spend enough time in it. But to somebody else, it's kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be intimidating.
It is.
This really makes more sense.
I agree. Everybody's on equal, and plus we're looking at each other and having a conversation.
Open this wall right here.
Okay, so are we good on the next steps?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, anything else for the good of the order? Mr. Lawyer. Matt Lawyer.
Yeah. Clint's been here all night. He's been fairly quiet.
He's been very quiet.
And
he's taking it all in.
I'm just curious. I don't know if you have anything to say. He's a grown man. He can pipe up. I don't have anything to say.
Well, I do want to reiterate, though, something that Councilor Kohler said, that the concession stand this year was the best run and turned out a net profit that exceeded expectations. And somebody we know named Mr. Clint Holland busted his butt to make that happen. And I believe it's very appropriate, and thank you, Matt, for saying so, to acknowledge and celebrate for the record that, Clint, your work is one of the reasons we can have this conversation right now. You worked very hard to bring that to a quality that's appropriate for our families to enjoy and to bring their friends and have them come back with them. So thank you for your dedication in making that possible. Appreciate it very much.
I'm impressed that you survived.
Seriously,
yeah.
Oh my God.
That's what this guy that needs to change. He needs help.
But good food, good service, good times, and it's good baseball and softball, as I understand it. All right. Anything else? Thank you for that.
We did do have two agenda items we didn't necessarily get on, so.
We actually did.
Okay.
The field projects and priorities. What we haven't done is short term. You talked about the long term in CIP. We haven't talked about short term, and I think that you guys have maintenance projects that are on deck for this year. What I would ask you to do is, would you email those to our group so we know what those are? Bill, you already have that, do you not?
Not yet.
No,
but you will have it.
Okay, so that would be helpful to know what this year looks like, and then when we come together in August, then we can work on not only our long-term CIP, but also capital improvement plan, but also what are the maintenance needs for the upcoming year, because you all just finished, and that's going to be fresh on your mind. Is that helpful? All right, I'm getting head nods that will work. Okay, I think we have a plan. We are adjourned. It is 7:34.
Oh, right.